All right, everybody, it's 7 o'clock. Let's start the meeting. Good evening and welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic.
Miss Amy.
For those of you who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9. Please welcome our panel, David and Mike. I will read the first paragraph on page 80, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. You know, I should read the steps.
Read the steps.
I'm going to. I'm getting to it. They're not even written down. All right, step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. All right, now we're on step 8. We're on page 80. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Whoever wants to go.
My name is David Yulee, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
My sobriety date is February 24, 2013. I have a sponsor Goes by the name of David F. He's sitting in the back over here. He knows he sponsors me. I contact him every day, and I try to contact him every day because that's what I told him I would do when I asked him to give me sound practical advice. I took the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous July 4th of 2014. Nope, 2013. And I left that house. When I left that house that day, what we're talking here, what we're going to talk today about steps 8 and 9, it was not presented as an option. It was presented as precise instructions on what I'm going to do when I leave that house that day. Anyway, I'd like to qualify myself just a little bit for any of y'all who haven't heard my story 117 times yet. I am a chronic alcoholic, which means that when I start to drink, I have little to no control over how much I drink thereafter. And when I try to stop for good, I can never, ever, ever stop for good. I've had brief periods, mostly when I was incarcerated, of sobriety, or sobriety, as my fearless leader says. And I've also had a period of a couple days not incarcerated where I thought it was a good idea that I don't have anything to drink. And after a couple days, I can't stand myself. People can't stand me, and I can't stand other people. So I'm absolutely at the point where I have to drink again. The point about where the fact that I cannot control my drinking, it's very simple. When I have one drink, I have another drink after that, alcoholic drink. And I'm not talking about chocolate milk. I can drink a half a gallon of chocolate milk and be done. If I drink a half a gallon of beer or liquor, there better be a whole lot more where that came from. So that's it. That's all that makes me an alcoholic. I have one DUI. I don't have any ex-wives. I didn't get married till I was sober. No girl was dumb enough to say yes to me. But anyway, so that's it. That's the only thing that makes me an alcoholic. Is when I try to stop for good, I can't stop. And when I start to drink, I got no control. I don't have anything to do with anything else other than that. 7 years ago, if you would have told me that I would be sober in 7 years from that date, sitting at a table in front of a group of people talking about amends, I had to knock your teeth out. Because those are fighting words. But anyway, so this opening paragraph right here, you know, I just said I didn't get married until I was 3 years sober. I had been with my wife for almost 8 years now, but we didn't get married till 3 years ago. When I got sober, things were kind of rocky. I will describe rocky. She threw my keys at me and said she doesn't ever want to see me again, which was typical, you know? That was typical in the last 34 years of my life. That's pretty much what went on between me and females. A couple months and then, you know, I'm asked to leave politely or not so politely and I go on my merry way. So I think, let's see right here. Oh, we doubt if in this respect alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people, but drinking does complicate sex relationships in a home. And, you know, it was complicated in my experience. You know, again, I wasn't married, but it was complicated because I was never, you know, I never really had, what I brought to the table in Alcoholics Anonymous was no children, never been married. I was 34 years old when I got here. I kind of did what I wanted when I wanted. I didn't have any responsibility. I have been in residential construction for 24 years. So, you know, there was no backlash for anything. Drug abuse, alcoholism, jail time, nothing. You know, I mean, I didn't have any repercussions. So I don't have a whole lot of experience with this paragraph, but I'll pass it off on a guy who does.
Okay.
Yeah, that's wrong. Hey, everybody. My name's Mike Midget. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't need the microphone. I have a sobriety date of February 14th, 2017. I have a home group, Sandbridge. We meet at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays. Tomorrow night's our anniversary meeting. They've got an Al-Anon speaker and a guy that's a half-ass AA speaker. If anybody wants to come, food's at 7 and meeting starts at 8. I have a sponsor that knows he's my sponsor. I call him every day, and I'm fortunate enough to sponsor other men in this program. I also have a service position. I'm the treasurer of the home group. From where I come from, that's just crazy to me every day that I'm the money handler of other people's stuff. You know, when I was young, I always had something wrong with me, like this alcohol. I like to always say that I was an alcoholic. I was born that way, and I'm 100% sure of that, because nothing was ever good enough. The spiritual malady they talk about in the book, the irritable, restless, and discontent, when I was a little kid, I was like that. Nothing pleased me. I always moving around, just nothing good enough. I used to tell my mom I had this hole, you know, I didn't know what was wrong. It was this thing I was trying to fill inside, and I never knew what it was. You know, at a young age, I got hooked on drugs at about 8.5 years old from a family member, and it was a, you know, I remember to this day that it immediately calmed me down. You know, my shoulders relaxed, I could take a deep breath, and the whole world disappeared. You know, I came into my own. Later on in life, I discovered alcohol is a lot easier to steal and a lot cheaper, and it did the same thing. It provided me with that ease and comfort the big book tells us the reason we drink. I was fortunate enough to walk into the rooms the last time I came on my deathbed with the hopelessness and disparity that gave me what it took to want to do this program, because I had nothing left in life. Everything, that hole I talked about as a kid, had consumed my whole body. I woke up every day, I just wanted to kill people or kill myself. There was no love, no joy. I didn't care about anything. I had lost myself. The second part of step one, life had become unmanageable. That was it. It wasn't the material things. It was losing myself, my spirit, and my love for everything. I also like to tell people I got perpetual dry throat, because when I'm out there screwed up, I steal from you, look you in the eyes, throw up all over your stuff, and everything's cool. I'm still ready to talk, but come up here and be brutally honest in front of my peers, people that are just like me. Still twist me up a little bit. When we read this part of on page 80, I immediately thought about the part in Bill's story where he says there were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. There had been no real infidelity, for loyalty to my wife, helped at times by extreme drunkenness, kept me out of those scrapes. And I think that sums up that paragraph that we read. All these feelings it talks about, of the husband feels lonely, feels sorry for himself. I was always doing that. And I was always too drunk to go away. So, you know, that was another thing I justified. Like, I've never cheated on you, you know, I'm great. Look at me, you got me in the bathtub again, and we're hiding it from the family and friends and kids, but I'm just great, I'm perfect, you know. It's how my mind justifies everything. And there were times where I reached out to the opposite sex for that feeling, you know. Like, somebody pity me, somebody give me what my wife's not giving me, and, you know, come home and be angry because we're not having sex. I mean, now I look back at it, I'm like, oh, I can't even believe she slept in the same bed with me sometimes. You know, unlike Dave, I got married young and had my first two kids young, and I always say I just don't know how it happened. To this day, I don't know how it happened. I came from a rough area. I was this way for a long time. I was not a nice person. She was a nice area, a beautiful person. I still can't figure it out. You know, now that I'm sober and everything's clear and I do the right things and I trust God, you know, it's amazing she came back to me, because if you ever hear my story, I lost that too, along with my children. In the last sentence, it said, "A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him." You know, looking back, I like to say, I always kept a job and I always did real good. It was another thing I used to justify everything I did. If I could provide and make it look good on the outside, I'm okay, you know? So we had the house and everything, and just like it says right there, I mean, she was the one going through the real hell. She was a prisoner, my kids were prisoners. I was never there for them, I was never doing anything. They were constantly making the picture look good, you know? My wife was to family, "Oh, he's all right, don't worry, you know? He's not overdosed again, he's not so drunk, he's in a bathtub, he's not this. He's real busy at work." It was, the whole thing was just like this big play. So that paragraph, I haven't read that one in a while, but gave me the chills when we read it. That's all I got for that one.
Thanks, Mike. Yes, ma'am. We're going to continue the reading on page 82. "If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing that he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, 'Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?'"
Well, for any of you guys or gals out there that have not taken the steps or in a little, you know, not really understanding what's going on here, so the steps are, they're standard operating procedure on how you're to do these things. You start at the beginning and you stop at the end. You never really stop, though. I can't really say that shit. Anyway, so 8, right? 8 is like Miss Amy said, "It's made a list of all persons I had harmed and became willing to make amends to them. The reason being is because this whole process is required for me to clean my side of the table, for me to get rid of all the shit that I have been accumulating out of me living the way I did for years and years and years. The people that I've hurt, Mom, Dad, my sister, and the countless other people that made my list, right?" This program, it's a spiritual program. It's not religious, it's spiritual. For me, the difference is very clear, and I can say this, I was a preacher's kid for 37 years. The difference to this alcoholic, nobody else, for this alcoholic, the difference is what I was taught in religion was to make me scared of going to hell. I could never understand that. Because at an early age, I was always very kind of hands-on, you know, balls to the wall, rebel. So the difference between religion and spirituality is, for religion, I feel, is for people that are scared of going to hell. Spirituality is for those who have already been there. I have been through hell and back multiple times under the lash of alcoholism and drug addiction. In my mind, If I contemplate taking another human being's life to save my own ass, to get put in prison so that way I'll never have to use drugs or drink ever again, that's pretty dark. That's a hell on its own. So, this program, the baseline of Alcoholics Anonymous, is taking these steps is to create a channel for me to build a relationship with a God of my own understanding, a higher power, if you will. And that is not possible unless I clear away the wreckage, everything that is holding me back from creating this relationship with a higher power. That's why this steps 8 and 9 is so important. Because I cannot build me, I cannot build a relationship with something, a working relationship with a higher power, if I'm still holding on to things, knowing in the back of my mind that I wronged my mom for so many years and I wronged my dad. How am I supposed to build something? How am I supposed to build a relationship with, say, this guy right here if there's turmoil between us? It's not going to. There's going to be a brick wall between us. That's what this program, that's what these steps do. So 8, I made a list of all persons I had harmed that came to my mind sitting there that day. And of course, that wasn't it, you know. I mean, I started drinking when I was 13 years old. I started daily drinking when I was 18. 18 to 34 years old. There's a lot of people along those roads from Virginia Beach to Florida to West Virginia to North Carolina. I mean, I met a lot of people. I encountered a lot of people in my years. It's impossible for me to sit down and put on the paper every single person that I harmed. My sponsor said the day I sat down to take these steps, he said, I don't care if you don't remember everybody. I want you to put down on the paper right here, right now, the people that you've been thinking about all those years. And it's just like this: mom, dad, sister, and at the time, my girlfriend. And there was a couple other people, my mom's parents, my mom and pop, and grandma and grandpa. And a couple other people made the list. And when I say a couple, there was 2 other people. Now, along these last 6.5 years, there's been a couple other people pop up. But originally, that's who it was, my immediate family. Passing all, did we read that part yet?
Yeah.
Passing all understanding is the patience of the mothers and wives. You know, I come from a good home. Like I said, I told you my daddy was a preacher and my mama was an educator. They're still married today. They got married I was born in 78. They got married in 1971. They're still together. Both my mom's parents, they died. They celebrated their 67th wedding anniversary. On my dad's side, they would have been married for 69 years, but grandma passed away a few years ago. I come from a good background. That doesn't mean that I'm not saying anything about my character. I'm just giving you some backstory, right? At the end of my drinking, little did I know that my parents were sleeping in 2 different bedrooms on the verge of collapse and divorce because of me. I was creating such chaos and turmoil between my parents and my sister at the time. Everybody that lives I come into, I'm like a tornado roaring through the lives of others. And I have no idea. Like he said, ain't this great? I've been sober 2 days this time. Right? Everybody should be happy. I should get a pat on the back. They're like, you're an asshole and you don't even see it. And they're right. I don't see these things. So when I make this list, right, I said at the beginning, it was not presented as an option if I'm going to do this or not. I left that man's house. He gave me a deadline. Within X amount, I'm not going to tell you my deadline, but I had a deadline and it wasn't very long. He said, you're going to come back to me when you figure out, when you have read this material enough, and you've read it and you've reread it, we're going to come back. You're going to come back to me. We're going to sit down and we're going to have a little practice session on how you're to approach these people. And that's what I did. I went back to his house. We had a little practice session. He said, check, you're ready to go. Go make your amends. I came back a week later. My amends were done. And I haven't looked back since. And that's how it's supposed to be done. If I was given the opportunity to walk away from this kind of stuff, if it was presented as an option, I probably wouldn't have done it. The only option that was I have been given since the day that I asked that man for help was the day that I showed up to his house. From that very day, I'll tell you what he said. He said, you could be at my house at 6 o'clock in the morning and we can walk you through these steps. If you choose not to, he said, I don't give a damn, because I'm going to wake up tomorrow, I'm going to be sober, and I'm going to wake up the next day, I'm going to be sober, and I will not guarantee that for you. And, you know, I'm very grateful to have a baseball bat line of sobriety, somebody that didn't give me options, somebody that said that, hey, stupid, this is what you got to do. Because I needed that kind of dummy-proof AA in my life. Because I'm a taker. I really am. If somebody gives me just a little wiggle room and I have any substantial time to think about it, I'm going to wiggle right out of it. Because I can't see what's in it for me. At the time when I get here, I'm still a taker. I still don't really know what the real problem is. I think that drinking is the problem. So, we feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. I got sober on February 24th. I went to 7 days of detox at Virginia Beach Psychiatric Center. So it was from Sunday to Sunday. And I got out of detox on Sunday, and my bed at my 30-day treatment facility wasn't open till Wednesday. So I sat in my house for 3 days. I sat in the house. I didn't really. I had a lot of activities going on. I didn't go to work, but I had constant supervision. Like a damn child. Because people knew that if left to my own devices, sitting in a house that for 12 years I got high and drunk at, I stood no chance. And I was the same way in my mind too. When I had my mom and my dad and my sister on rotating shifts sitting there with me, I really didn't mind it. Because in my mind that I knew that given the chance, a little bit of wiggle room, and that's it. And I remember sitting there, I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 11 or 12 days sober. And I thought I thought everything was great. But you know, it wasn't great. I mean, inside of my own skin, you know, I'm like, you know what? I've never had 12 days of not drinking when I've never been locked up before. This is phenomenal. And then I'd sit down and my skin's itching, you know, and I sit down on the couch and I get up and I walk into the kitchen and I don't know what I went into the kitchen for. And I get up and I walk outside and take the dog for a walk and I come back in and I sit on the couch and I sit there for 30 seconds and I go somewhere else. And somebody says something to me. Mom says, hey, David, what do you want for dinner? I'm like, I'm not fucking hungry. Little things, man. Irritable, restless, and discontent like Mike was talking about. That's what I bring to the table in the absence of alcohol. I have to have a solution prevalent in my life to keep me calm. So a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. You take the alcohol away from me and you get a whole lot more demons than you do when I'm drinking. Pass.
It's so fun to follow him up. Yeah, I was looking over this while he was talking. And the thing that stood out was that second sentence. You know, sometimes we hear an alcoholic say the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. And like Dave touched on, like I was talking about my whole life, I had this void. When I'm dry and not doing the program, I'm worse than when I'm drinking. Everything, the spiritual malady they talk about, it comes out. You know, it tells you in one part, the alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. I'm even unlovelier when I don't have what I think is my solution in me. I'm a dick. You know, usually 2-3 days, people are asking me to go back to what I was doing. You know, please, please stop, please stop. Then I stop and they're like, maybe you shouldn't stop. It says, certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. You know, when I came home that day to an empty house with no children, no wife, everything's gone. The book gives us a comparison of a hard drinker and a real alcoholic. Am I clearing my throat a lot again?
I saw that you were almost out.
At least I gave a disclosure this time. No, it tells us the hard drinker, you know, given sufficient reason, they can stop. When I come home to something like this, I'm losing everything in the world. The three little angels I have, to this day, I don't know how we're so freaking perfect. They're nothing like me, except they look kind of like me, so I feel sorry for them. That doesn't make me even think about stopping what I'm doing. I go deeper and darker, and I get in this world where I can't look at myself. And the hell if I can sit up here and look at you. So when I come in this room, there's another part that says us as alcoholics can't bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the pain and suffering of a week or a month ago. These times through life, when I'm making my mind up I'm done, and I'm totally honest when I do it, I get a little bit of time and I immediately go to, you know, it wasn't that bad. I can go do this one more time. I can get right back in it. It's not going to be that bad. Going through rehabs and mental institutes and psych wards and jails, people come in and they tell me stuff, and it's always this easier, softer way. You know, I can come sit around and everything will be all right. Just go sit around and occupy space in a chair. When I came in this last time, I had a man that loved me enough to say, Mike, you're gonna fucking die. And you need to do this now. Come to find out later, we come from a line that comes back from the very beginning, and we do it the same way they did it. Because they took it seriously, and they knew what was in black and white on this book is the truth. You know, taking the steps rapidly with this man saved my life. I met God immediately. I had a spiritual experience I didn't even know I was having. I remember feeling and touching and smelling for like the first time in my life and just breaking down in a ball. I remember reading these steps, and the eighth step was like scary to me when I didn't know what the book was about. And then it's funny when you get to the part in the book, it tells you, hey, dumbass, you already did it in step four. And when I did step four, just like Dave was saying, this was not an option to me. It never was. He told me from the beginning, you can do it or you don't. You're an alcoholic, I expect you to drink. He set no standard for me. He also asked me three questions when I asked him to sponsor him. It was, are you an alcoholic? Are you willing to go to any length for a victory over alcohol? And what time can you call me every day? Step eight also mentions again, remember, you said you were willing to go to any length for a victory over alcohol. So when I did step four, he said, look, man, you've ran through some shit. We all have. You know, I think I'm a superhero when I come in here that I've done all this stuff that y'all haven't done. Some of it maybe, but but it's not that bad, you know. When we come in and I relate to this man and he shares some of his stuff before I write this list, and he told me, I'm not asking how the watch is made, I'm asking what time it is. You know what's blocking you from the sunlight. And that really settled to me. Because I did. I knew all the shit I was going to take to the grave and not tell a soul about. It wasn't a big thought process. I knew what I was holding on to. Once the pen hit the paper, I knew. The minute something came out, I said, yeah, nobody's going to know that shit. Oh, yeah. And it wasn't that bad. And when it says passing all understanding as the patient mothers and wives have had with alcoholics, I don't know how many times my sponsor told me that. You know, it says at the end, don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stop? From my self-knowledge of going to rehabs and being in institutions and all this and everything I heard and all the bullshit I heard, I always knew the amends were what got you something, you know what I mean? So when I set out on this list, I'm just like this dude. I'm going to tell him sorry, and I'm good. You know, I was good. I was good. Not everybody's going to be good with me. I did some shitty stuff to people. But I can tell you right now, everybody looks at me different. They know something different. I have a talk with some of the guys I work with. You know, anonymity always gets brought up and stuff. And I'm like, I was born and raised in here. People see me and they know I'm not doing what I was doing before. I don't really care if they know what I'm doing. They already know. You know, I'm looking at them. I'm a decent person. I probably want to help them if they'll let me. It's a big change. It's an entire psychic change they talk about. I never had that before. Now, I remember sitting and people bringing meetings into these places, and it chokes me up every time I get asked to do something in AA. Because I could have never pictured myself up here being that person. Never. I didn't think it was an option. And I never really thought people were sober. I thought that just meant you did your thing on the weekend, and the rest of the week you were a decent human being. It just was never part of my life. You know, that understanding the patient mothers and wives is a crazy thing. So my wife came back, and the biggest thing she said to me was, if I dealt with your ass for all that bullshit, ain't nobody getting the good part.
I love that girl.
And you know, my mom's battled cancer my whole life. And she never... Now, I told y'all I've done some horrible things, right? She has never pictured me any differently. Never. And she's battling. I'm battling an illness that's going to take my life, and she's battling a disease that's going to take her life. And she always had hope. The one thing I needed to lose to get in there, she carried. Every time I looked her in the eyes and told her I was done for good, time gets shorter and shorter, man. That month turns into 3 weeks. 3 weeks turns into 2 weeks. There comes a point where I'm 37 days sober and I've got a gun in my mouth looking at pictures of my kids because I just don't know what to do. And I'm asking somebody I think I'm mad at for help because I'm screaming and praying. And I haven't met this person yet. And that's the meeting with God that this program brought me to save my life. That's all I got.
Pass.
We're going to continue the reading on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
I think I'm going to pass so we can read some more.
You want me to read on? Oh, I'm reading. I'll go right on. You want to talk or what do you want to do?
I don't know. I'm confused.
You're messing things up, dude.
Keep reading.
All right. Continuing on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Next is the process.
I had to hear that last sentence.
You didn't hear the last
sentence? No, I had to hear it.
All right. Get on with it, dude.
Made a list of all persons we harm and became willing to make amends to them all. Three key words in this program: honesty, willingness, and open-mindedness. You know, the man that I sat down with, he said, if you never want to drink again, you don't have to. And if you don't want to feel the way you feel in the absence of alcohol, you don't have to feel that way either. Because that's the problem, right? When I'm not drinking. He said, all you got to do is this. It doesn't matter how deep your hole is or how long you've been digging. It only is 12 steps to get out. And willingness is the essential part for me of doing this. And he said, if you could sit there in that chair and look at me and say that you don't want to do this, when I offer you a solution, you just might be the dumbest human being I've ever met in my life because I've heard your story. And I said, you know what? This ain't that bad. Because I've been to my mama hundreds of times, maybe in 1,000 times, and said, Mom, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Right? My sister, I'm sorry I broke into your house and stole all your change again. A grown-ass man. I got a full-time job. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a career carpenter. I make a little bit more in minimum wage. And here I am. I'm running myself out of money. Drugs and alcohol. And I break into people's house and steal their change. My sister and my parents. Yeah, I think I can muster up some willingness to go to these people and make right the wrongs I've done all these years. And just like it says in the book, sorry won't fit the bill, right? How many times have I gone to my mom and said, Mom, I'm sorry, again, right? And bless her heart, she was like, I know one day you will be good. One day you will be get well. I'm like, yeah, can I just borrow 20 bucks? I really need some whiskey. Man, it's such a hard life, you know? So, yes, I was willing to do this. And no, it wasn't an option. Here's what you're going to do. Here's your timeline. You're going to do this. And let's categorize these very important people in your life. Mama is always on the top of the list. And then Dad. And then my siblings, my sister. And my brother-in-law. And on and on and on and on. There are some wrongs we can never fully right. Do we read that one?
Okay.
There was something that made my fourth step that transitioned onto my eighth step. And it was for my mom's parents who were deceased that had weighed on me a long time. I started screwing up with them when I was about 13 years old. And I didn't stop screwing up with them until they passed when I was 19 and 20 years old. And that shit weighed on me a lot. And they were gone. And I wrote a letter, right? Just like it says. And I burnt that shit. I love setting stuff on fire. And I burned it. And it didn't do anything to me. I absolutely got zero warm, fuzzy feeling. I didn't feel like anything had been removed. Nothing. I was actually pissed off about it. And I went back and I said, ma'am, I wrote the letter and I burned it. And I'm more agitated now than I was before I wrote the damn letter. And he said, there are some things you'll never be able to write, right? Monetarily, I could never pay these people back. Tens of thousands of dollars that I took from them. My own family.
He said, when a newcomer asks you for a ride, you give that man a ride. I don't give a damn where it is. If a newcomer needs a book, you give that man a book. And I give out about 25 books a year at $10 a piece, even when I ain't got a whole lot. And every time that basket comes around, I put a minimum, I mean, I'll put a dollar in sometimes. Sometimes I'll drop a 20 in the basket. I can never repay what I took. And even when I think that monetarily I'm equivalent to what I took, I've still got it on my conscience. That's something I'll never be able to fully write it. So, you know, there's a lot of things that I'll never be able to fully do. But, you know, I was taught to never look back. You know, don't regret the past. We didn't read that, did we?
Not yet.
I drank too much caffeine before I come here. Anyway. You know, again, it's all about willingness. You know, do I have an honest desire that I don't want to go back living that way of life? Right? And it's very simple. Compared to the stuff that I used to do, this whole business of sobriety and the steps, they're easy. I mean, I build stuff for a living out of wood. Some of it is very, very, very heavy. Heavy as shit. Back-breaking stuff. And compared to that, this is the easiest thing I've ever done. It really is. It's a mindset to get into it. You know, of course, it's not when I get here, it's not a mindset. Or if drinking was a mindset, I'd have mindsetted my ass right on out of here. You know, it's not an option. Just because I have self-knowledge doesn't mean that that has any power or use for me at all. Once having taken the steps, it's a mindset that I'm not going to go back living that way of life. I don't give a damn how big you are. You might be able to pour alcohol down my throat, but that doesn't mean I'm taking that shit willingly. You could offer me $100 million right now to take a drink of Budweiser, and I'd take F yourself. I ain't doing it. $100 million. I wouldn't trade my sobriety for nothing in the world. Nothing. Anyway, we're getting close. Pass.
I like what Dave said. This is a simple program of action. Compared to my old life, always wondering what the hell I told somebody, what I did, looking behind my back, never knowing what was true and false. This program's simple, and like he said, I owe it my life, and I've got to realize I'm doing this for life. When I come into this ninth step, you know, it gives me exact, precise directions, instructions in this book. I was flipping through and I saw something I underlined. It said, his faults are not discussed, we stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the results. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. And that was my experience with all my amends. First of all, I was told very bluntly by my sponsor, you're not saying sorry. You've been a sorry POS your whole life. You've told everybody you're sorry. You're not going to say you're sorry. You're going to tell them what you did wrong. And if they, you know, the last part, we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. That's powerful. I'm not crawling to you when I do this, and I'm not begging. I'm telling you what the hell I did. And he also said, if they're going to come back, it's your time for once in your life to stand there and eat shit. You take it. But you know, I had very little of that. Some people, most people, I think were so shocked I admitted I had done something. You know, I had to go to my wife, which we were in a nasty divorce. I mean, obviously. And she was so dumbfounded, she never even said anything. I mean, her jaw dropped. She said, thank you. I didn't go and tell her I was sorry. I told her I was worthless. I was a worthless husband. I was a worthless father. Everything I've done in my life is nothing. It was all a front to help me, help my selfishness. It tells us their defects may be glaring. There was a lot of, I was very good at finding what was wrong with you. But now's not the time for that. It's all about finding you. And when you get this off your step, off your chest, I can tell you right now, when I made it to step three, which was very quickly, when I did step three, honestly, that hole I was describing for the first time in my life filled with something. And it was crazy. I was in tears. So why the hell wouldn't I make it to this step? This step's got the long list of good shit that we hear in every meeting's gonna happen. And that's what happened. When I got done with my ninth step, I knew for a fact the problem was removed. I did not. When it tells you to meditate before you do these things, for the first time in my life, my psychotic mind that always had everything spinning, I could never make sense of what the hell was going on, was dead. It was calm. You know, my mom used to tell me prayers when you're talking to God and meditations when you're listening, you know, you're taking it in. I knew God was there immediately. I closed my eyes in silence and stillness, and nothing went on. It also tells us there's a long road. And that's where step 12 comes in, practicing these principles in all my affairs. I can't say nothing the matter here, like it said in the sentence before. I've got to, you know, besides carrying my book around and coming in here and saying stuff like I know something, I got to go at home to the wife I tortured and be a good person. And my two oldest kids that saw me in my worst, I've got to make that living amend it talks to. I've got to show them that there is something better out there. The people I've harmed that aren't around anymore, I had to do this shit in their honor, you know what I mean? If I was out there doing what I did at 200%, there ain't no way in hell I'm not gonna do this simple program 250%. Because I wake up and I'm alive now. I can see now. I can look at you. When I was in my cups, all my mirrors were broken because I couldn't even look at myself. Life sucked. I didn't want to wake up. Now I look forward to it. It's amazing. That's all I got. Pass. Pass.
All right, we're going to finish on page 83. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
All right, I'm looking at the clock. We got 6 minutes left.
Hit it.
If I start talking about this, we'll go over. So I'm just going to wrap it up real quick. You know, first of all, I'd like to thank the members of Simple Actions for inviting me up here tonight. It's always a pleasure to put on a suit and tie.
Anyway, you know, there ain't nowhere else I'd rather be this evening. There really ain't. If you're new, or you're not new, or you've been in and out, if you don't want to drink again, you don't have to. If you don't want to feel the way you feel in the absence of alcohol, you don't have to feel that way either. There's a solution. It's relatively easy if you put your mind to it. I highly suggest getting what we talk about in here, this sponsor. Somebody that has been through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to take you through the book.
Pass.
Yeah, I'd like to thank all y'all for listening, and thank Miss Amy, Mr. Dave for inviting us. I don't think I told you, but we dress up to show respect for this program. I wear a suit for funerals, weddings, and AA speaking. You know, the emptiness I felt my whole life that I touched on, I never had any purpose in life. This program gave me purpose. All the things it tells you are going to disappear are, but you got to read the next part. There's more work to do. You're going to continue to do that ninth step every time something pops up in your life. You're going to continue to pray and meditate. You're going to continue to help people. You're going to continue to do this program in your life. If you don't do that, just like if you do the steps in a different order, you're not getting any of it. You're not going to get it from sitting in the chair. I like to think of it as this. Look at all these chairs in here. And look how many of you have the opportunity to sit in one. I almost didn't make it. And I see people every day that don't make it. This program saved my life. If you take it seriously and do it, it'll save yours too. And then you get to show another person how to do it. There's no better feeling in the world than that. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, we're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it did previously. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Melissa.
My name is Melissa. I'm an alcoholic.
Melissa.
This Saturday, the 9th, is the annual gratitude breakfast from 9 to 1 at Wycliffe Presbyterian Church, 1445 North Brighton Road in Virginia Beach. There will be four speakers, a speaker from each district, and food and fellowship. Come see me or Emily early afterwards. We've got the flyer. We can airdrop to you.
Thank you.
Mark Schmidt, alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Tomorrow night, starting at 7, it's in all the way out to Sandbridge. I know it's a long way, but it's a beautiful place down there. I think it's the 35th. 36th anniversary. There's going to be an AA speaker, Mike, and there's also going to be an Al-Anon speaker. But before that, there's going to be lots of food, so come on out.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Anybody else? All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety we would like to welcome you?
John.
Hi, John. Welcome.
John, welcome.
You're cool. Gabby?
Hi, my name's
Gabby. Hi, Gabby. Welcome. Welcome. Yes.
My name is Joe, and I'm
an
alcoholic.
Hey, Joe. Welcome. All right, good to have you. Literature is available right here. Everything is free that you can carry. If you'd like to purchase a book, please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. I'll hook you up. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we please thank the panel again for sharing? Yeah. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, everyone is invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, Colonial Avenue and 22nd Street. Will someone volunteer, David?
Alcoholic David.
Hey, David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, we have a nice way of closing.
We'll give you a few.
Get food?
Yeah.
No. Oh, I wish y'all would come. You're not.
I'm not even starving.
I also love a Mexican food.
You don't get to see me. I'm just spread out.
You got other fish to fry?
Uh-uh.
All right. Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven. Hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.